I'm Brittany French.
Hey, I'm Rob McDonald.
And this is the Great Plains Outdoors Podcast.
We're going to talk about everything from fishing and hunting to hiking, paddling, and adventures on the Great Plains. We'll cover it all here.
So join us each episode and hear what's going on in the great outdoors on the Great Plains. Welcome to the Great Plains Outdoors Podcast. We're so thankful for each of you for tuning in and listening to our podcast as often as you do, for sharing it with your family and friends. Thank you so much for that. It was fun to kind of sit back and reflect when I was working on the outline for this episode about where this podcast came from. And it was just kind of a dreamt up dream, if you will, Rob had, and he kind of consolidated with me on it about starting it back in April of 21, which is crazy to think about. But so glad we've been able to collectively get it off the ground and share some really great stories about the outdoors, the missions of other organizations, the knowledge and passion that people have with all of you guys. So thank you so much for tuning in.
Yeah, and Brittany, I think you're absolutely right. We have had some fantastic guests and covered some terrific topics. And I'm really excited for the guest lineup that we have in the hopper for this fall and later this winter. And I'm really excited for a guest we have today.
Yeah, likewise. I don't know if we've shared this on our podcast yet or not, Rob, but with little baby French on the way, we've been trying to plan ahead of schedule to get some guests lined up. And that's put us in a position to reach out to some really neat people, which I'm thrilled about. So like you said, we have a good lineup and I hope you guys all enjoy that. But more importantly to today, we have a wonderful guest joining us, and his name is Jim. Jim Cucurruto is the executive director of a 501c3 nonprofit called Outdoor Stewards of Conservation Foundation. We're going to kind of shorten that this episode to OSCF, where he's responsible for filling the OSCF's mission, which is to use research-based communication and engagement programs to help recruit the next generation of HATS. And HATS stands for Hunters, Anglers, Trappers, and Shooters. And promote the fact that HATS are the primary stewards of funders of conservation. I just love that so much. Jim developed and manages OSCF's recruitment, conservation, and communication-focused programs such as Come With, Connecting with Conservation, Fill a Bag While Filling Your Tag, and as well as the Outdoor Industry Communication Council. Now, you might have heard Jim's name before. That's because he's got a great tenure in the outdoor industry. Prior to joining OSCF, Jim spent more than a decade at the helm of the National Shooting Sports Foundation's research and market development team, where he built a vast knowledge library for the outdoor industry and was the NSSF's liaison for the state and federal wildlife agencies, NGOs, and conservation groups. Jim worked with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service to develop the program called Partner with the Payer. I hope many of us are familiar with that one, and helped expand recruitment programs such as National Shooting Sports Month and the Plus One Movements. Now, in what little free time I think Jim has, he likes to spend it chasing waterfowl, whitetails, trout, and bass. Jim, thanks for joining us. Super excited to have you on here, and excited to learn more about OSCF.
Oh, thank you, both Brittany and Rob. It's great to be here, and it's a congratulations in order. Did I hear you say
yes.
Something about
that's yes, great news. Thank you. Thanks so much. Yeah, we've got a little girl hunter, hopefully, joining us in early January this next year.
All right. Well, we'll add her to the long list of recruitment efforts that we're going to need.
Yes. Yes, we are truly passing it on in the French household right now. Well, Jim, let's learn more about you. I'm curious. I don't know if I've ever asked you, how did you get started in the outdoors? What does that look like for you?
Yeah, so I grew up in Putnam County, New York. And you know, I hate to say, but 40 years ago, it was much more rural than it is now. And my father was a big outdoorsman. So we did a lot of hunting and fishing and target shooting and just probably spent more time outdoors than indoors. And he's still out there. He's retired now. I think he'll be 81 this hunting season. And I like to say he spends more time in the woods than the deer. So I had a great mentor and spent a lot of good quality time outdoors. And then, you know, went through growing up through college and business major. And I got a position here. One of the first positions out of school I had for about 10 years was in direct marketing, catalogs, magazines, that sort of thing. And I had clients, you name them, across the board, from, you know, apparel to cooking. But I had several outdoor-related customers that we helped to grow their businesses. And I always liked working, you know, gravitated toward, you know, working with those guys and looked forward to the phone calls with them more than some of the other clients. So I knew that was kind of what I wanted to do, and got fortunate enough to find a position at probably end of 2009 with National Shooting Sports Foundation. And that's where I really got to was in the right spot at the right time, got to you know, expand some of the research that we needed to learn for the outdoor industry, and use that research to build programs to help grow participation. And that kind of led me to Outdoor Stewards of Conservation, which I think we started about the same time your podcast got started. You said about April 2021 you guys were, and that's about the time I was filling out the paperwork with the IRS to become a 501c3. So, you know, it's worked out terrific. And I've been very fortunate in my life and my career being able to spend a lot of time outdoors.
That's good stuff, Jim. I'm curious, you mentioned when you were at NSSF doing research, and I'm just curious what does that look like? You know, I think, you know, I start to think about research, analytics, numbers, trying to find patterns and percentages. And so is that sort of what you were doing there, and like research around what, really?
Sure. And back in 2010, there wasn't a lot of knowledge, right? What's this thing called a woman gun owner? Don't we just yeah. shrink it and pink it, right? Don't we just
yeah.
make that gun small and spray paint it pink? Like that, you know, that was the knowledge level, right? 15 yeah. years ago. So we did a lot of research on, you know, women gun owners, you know, what their perceptions of, what their needs were. And we learned a lot about, they were not being marketed to, they were not happy walking into a gun store. And, you know, fortunate with NSSF being the trade association for the firearms industry, I had 7,000 retail members, and we said, hey, we just did all this research, it's time to, you know, improve the way you treat your customers, your female customers, and into the manufacturers, and improve the product lines. They're interested in fit, quality, practicality. They're not interested in, you know, just one option of a small, 22 caliber pink revolver, you know, so that type of stuff. Just learn about the new markets that were available to us. To have current participation data was helpful, economic impact data. We learned things about that were anecdotal. We just figured, okay, we think these things are happening. We have to prove them through research. One of the big findings was training, right? Self-defense, obviously a huge market for new gun owners. But we learned that if you provide training to that first-time gun buyer, they're going to come back and buy 40% more equipment. And you know, it was very clear, cut-dry data. You know, we broke out the research by people that bought a gun and didn't get training, and people that bought a gun and had training, and they continued to participate and purchase more. So obviously very important data for the industry, but also for, you know, expanding participation. So, you know, a lot of information on the AR-15 or the modern sporting rifle now being used for hunting and self-defense, the demographics of people. So it was fun filling a lot of holes there. You know, there's still some more that needs to be done on the research side of things, mm-hmm. but I think we learned a lot, and fortunate the, you know, the industry has done a much better job using that data.
Yeah. Yeah. Jim, I have to imagine, were you one of the first like research positions with NSSF, or was that something you stepped into with other roles already established around there?
There was somebody that was there before me, I think for 4 or 5 years. And I think that was kind of the first role. So they kind of laid the groundwork and worked with companies, Southwick Associates and the responsive managements out there. And, you know, we just kind of took it from there and applied a lot of it to, you know, my thought process was increased participation and that'll solve, you know, a lot of problems, increased sales, also help politically. Like, you know, we, as you've probably seen, you know, somebody that has never touched a gun that but had an interest in hunting or target shooting, you know, that first time they fire it, they're like, oh, that's not as bad as I saw on TV. That's not as bad as what I've been told or what I've read. Right. So it changes people's opinions almost immediately the first time they fire a firearm. So we just figured the more people participating, the better off for the entire industry.
Yeah. Was there a pretty, you know, Jim, you and I get to share the room at some conferences and symposiums, you know, at a national level. And I'm really thankful for that because I learned so much from some of you folks who have been in the space for so long. But did you kind of do some of this research and lead some of these conversations and have folks look at you like you've got two heads coming out of your body and like, what is he saying? What does that look like? And I mean, you got to think about the aggressive approach to research and why it's so necessary to look at that stuff and implement it for change.
Oh, yeah, there were certainly some old school folks that we've always done it this way and we're not going to change. We don't need women gun owners. We don't need to diversify the outdoors. But luckily, you know, they've kind of aged out and we've got a very receptive audience right now that is kind of hungry for, you know, making this business decisions based on hard data instead of opinion.
Yeah, I really am enjoying that this time in our industry is hearing these conversations about just that. You know, it's not enough to implement program, like that's the first step. But the other important part is evaluating it and doing some research on it and making sure it is actually making the impact we want it to make long term, you know, not just today in this one calendar year. So I love hearing about that.
Yeah, and it's nice. It translates really well to the R3 movement that you're so heavily involved in and doing such a good job at it. Outdoor mentors. You know, one of the coolest things I learned was, you know, we had the three R's. We want to recruit new people. We want to retain the ones we have, and not only retain them, but we want to expand their participation by crossing them over into other activities with the firearm. Yeah. And then we want to reactivate those lapsed ones. So we learned a lot about all three of those. But one of the best things that I think we learned on the recruitment aspect was what we call the three I's, right? We get 10 million people on the fence that want to get into the field, but they need three things. One is information. They don't know how to get started. They don't know where to go. They don't know what they need. So we need to provide them with information. Then the second and most important I is that invitation. Hey, do you want to come with me? You want to come out fishing, you want to come out hunting, you want to come to the range, and exactly what kind of Pass It On does. And just that invitation is, without that, right, we're not increasing participation. And then, you know, to incentivize it is a third eye, which is the least important, but it's more for the mentor to help kickstart them into saying, hey, Rob, you want to take Jim out on an elk hunt? Well, maybe you want to take Jim out in elk hunt and we'll give you a $500 gift card to Cabela's or, you know, something like that, right? Incentivize it for the mentor a little bit as well. Not that they need it as much, but it helps accelerate the process.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting. I mean, you're covering so many bases there through the research and how that ties to the R3 movement. And I'm just curious. So you were at NSSF for over a decade, and then you made this transition to the Outdoor Stewards of Conservation Foundation. So what did that look like? And the OSCF, you know, what is the goal there? Are you still in the research game? What are you trying to accomplish, and kind of what did that look like?
Yeah, so this is kind of, it was an opportunity for me to do exactly what I wanted to do, you know, start a new organization. And there was a couple of things I wanted to do. One was tell the story about how conservation is truly funded in America. It always bothered me that hats, right, those hunters, anglers, trappers, and shooters, and there's 60 million active hats in America, are the primary funders of conservation, but they don't even know it, much less the general population. And, you know, the way conservation, real quick for the listeners, is funded in America is through the purchase of hunting and fishing licenses is about $1.6 billion a year. And excise taxes on products like firearms, ammunition, bows, arrows, rods, reels, and lures, and even motorboat fuel for those fishing boats comes to another $1.6 billion. And then you've got your duck stamps and your donations to the organizations like NWTF and all those. But it's about $3.6 billion a year that those 60 million hats pay. And that's $10 million a day to conservation. And the vast majority of that $3.6 billion gets filtered down to state wildlife agencies. So the state wildlife agency that's doing that tremendous on the ground work, whether it's, you know, buying land, managing wildlife management areas, managing wildlife diseases, teaching hunter education, building shooting ranges, building boat ramps, trout hatcheries, none of that will be possible without hunters, anglers, trappers, and shooters paying that $10 million a day. So you can imagine if your state wildlife agency lost 70% of its budget, which is about what hats pay, it would decimate wildlife populations in America. So we really want to get that point across that it is us, the hats, that are paying for conservation. It's a terrific story. It's great PR, and it hasn't been communicated well enough, in my opinion. And the other part of that is too, you know, again, we do so many good things as outdoors men and women that we want to tell the story there. So we built a program called Fill a Bag While Filling Your Tag. And that's where we distribute reusable, biodegradable bags to hats all across America. And we all know this, when we're out in the woods and waters, doesn't matter how far you are deep in the woods or how far you've traveled chasing trout on a trout stream, you're going to come across a plastic bottle or a Mylar balloon or an old beer can or something like that. It's amazing how deep you can be in the woods or wilderness and still find something. So now we'll, you know, stop and take that out of the woods and waters with you, but get credit for being a steward of conservation. Snap a photo, post it to your social media, use hashtag trophy trash, and get credit, you know, spread the word about the good that hats do for the conservation. And we've been fortunate to have a whole bunch of sponsors of that program, from Ruger and Marlin to the NRA and Fiocchi and Federal. So the industry is really catching on to that. They'll get bags from us, we put their logo on them and a little QR code that plays a video, and they distribute them out to the customers to take them out in the woods and waters with them.
I love that. It's such an easy thing for all of us to do as well. I always try to tell all the kids we take out hunting is, before we leave, I want you guys to go find a couple pieces of trash and bring it back to the truck with you. And they kind of look at me funny, but I do think we get pretty far away from, you know, taking care of the lands out there, whether we put the trash there or not. I think it's just so important, that message you guys are delivering through that program.
Yeah, and it's kind of fun to see too. We have a social media, Instagram at Outdoor Stewards, and folks will just post pictures of their hashtag trophy trash. It's so
I love
cool.
That.
It is like a really cool feeling, kind of like that first time, you know, shooter or something like that. Okay, that's pretty cool. I have no idea who that person is or how they got that bag, but they're out there collecting trash and proud of it. So it's a neat program that you know, just little over a year old. So we're going to build that along with some other things as well.
Jim, I think that's a perfect segue. I was just curious about, so how old is Outdoor Stewards? And, you know, you've got your, no doubt you've got your primary goals, you know, things that are happening right now. You've probably got some things that maybe are on the horizon that you're looking at. And then, you know, what do you see heading into the, I don't know what your dream is 5 years, 10 years down the road. Obviously it'd be great to have Outdoor Stewards of Conservation Foundation be a household name in the homes of the hats, right? The hunters and anglers and trappers and shooters, but sort of what's on your radar?
The big thing is, and so we're about 2 years old, a little over 2 years old of an organization. I would love to never, ever have to distribute another bag. That means all the trash in the woods is cleaned up, right? That put me out of business. Let's put that thing on the shelf. But I think we're a long ways off on that, right? But the another program we have is called Come With. And that's, you know, basically that's the terminology we use, right? That the three I's we talked about, that's inviting somebody to come with you. And if we can activate those 60 million active hunters, anglers, trappers, and shooters to, we don't want all of them to say invite somebody with them, but, you know, a portion of them that will, you know, take that step and get to learn how cool it is to be a teacher, be a mentor, be a friend that explains to someone, you know, how to fish, how to hunt, how to shoot, how to trap. It is, you know, it's a great feeling. So that's something that we're really going to be focusing on in the years to come here. And a big, you know, kick of mine too is diversifying the outdoors. You know, I'm a old white guy with a beard. There's a lot of old white guys with beards that hunt, fish, trap, and shoot. But through research, we know 10 million people are out there wanting to get started, and they don't all look like me. So a huge opportunity. We've done some research on the Native American participation in the outdoor activities. They participate at a higher rate, and they want to get started at a higher rate than the general population. One of our board members, Chuck War, is a tribal member of the Little River Band of Ottawa Indians, and a friend of mine, Forrest Parker, is on Cherokee Nation, and they've helped us with those studies, and we're really starting to push that message out there. And that's nice. We are seeing some action. I think a group called First Hunt Foundation, which you may know, is using that data and focusing on recruiting participants, Native American women, on their first elk hunt and stuff like that. So it's really cool to see. But those are a couple of things that we think are going to take some time.
So you mentioned just then research and projects. So I'm curious, you know, I've never got a mailer to say, hey, join Outdoor Stewards of Conservation, come to our banquet, buy a raffle ticket. So I'm curious, what does your organization look like as far as fundraising and membership and those sorts of dynamics?
Yeah, one of the things we wanted to do, Rob, was kind of do some things right before asking folks to give us $25 to be a member. And we had a heck of a year here, just wrapping up 2023. You know, one of our other programs called Connecting with Conservation, where we work with industry manufacturers such as Creedmoor Sports and a state DNR such as Alabama DNR. We'll get those two groups together, make a short video that thanks the end user for funding conservation. And, you know, we've got about 9 of those videos. We partnered with Non-Typical Outdoorsman TV with the host and producer, Eric Morris. Morris is one of the few African-American hosts and producers of an outdoor TV show. And same thing, we're recruiting from within industry and agency, showing how to diversify the outdoors and increase participation that way. So we're going to start, we haven't even promoted those, right? I think I sent one over to you guys, a tour of bear archery that we did, but we haven't even distributed those. So once we get those out there, you know, folks will get a little bit more familiar with us. And we are going to open up a gun broker store, you know, hopefully get some, you know, product or some donations from the industry that we can generate a little bit of revenue. One of my board members, Jennifer Wisniewski, used to be with Georgia DNR, then Tennessee DNR. She's now the CMO for National Deer Alliance. But she's got tremendous experience doing sweepstakes when she was with TWRA. I think she took like a single elk tag and turned it into like $600,000 or something with a sweepstakes. So she knows how to do that. And I've been picking her brain on doing those sweepstakes and stuff. But we really wanted to, you know, do some things. We've got some good research projects out there that we completed. We learned about American attitudes toward hunting, fishing, trapping, and shooting. We just are about to put out a report on hunting with the AR platform, modern sporting rifle, and how to reactivate lapsed participants. So, you know, once we get those out there and show people that we've accomplished some really cool things across the board from our programs to our research, then I'll feel better about asking some folks for some money.
Well, as a hunter, angler, trapper, and shooter, I appreciate that. Thank you for setting that groundwork and kind of building that foundation, and appreciate the cause that you guys are after, and I'll be happy to support it when the time comes.
Yeah, and somebody told me we got that hat monkey, you know, the HATS, right? We got to figure out how to put that on a t-shirt and sell it, or on hats on hats or something like that.
Yeah.
So we'll come out with those, you know, the coffee mugs and the hats and shirts as well down the road.
Well, I think you're touching on so much there, Jim. So many people that even Rob and I have conversations with on our podcast who are in this realm of work or are passionate about it don't realize what hats are funding in conservation. And I think it's just, you know, and that's not the lack of research that's out there. It's just the lack of knowledge and sharing that knowledge. So what I love about what you guys are doing is you're kind of that liaison. You're that broker of knowledge and research and opportunities to all of these other partners. I mean, I can't even keep track of how many partners you've already listed. And it's great because I think that's how you can make really widespread impact.
Yeah, and I was super fortunate to be in that position at NSSF where, you know, 11 years working directly with the manufacturers and retailers and 11 years working with the state wildlife agencies and the NGOs. It was somewhat of a unique position. So I said, well, I might as well, you know, leverage that and keep that ball rolling, because there is huge opportunity to get the states and the industry and the NGOs working together. We have such similar goals, but we communicate separately. Mm-hmm. So now that's what we're trying to do, is get some folks on the same page.
Yeah, I love that. And that's a big effort. So kudos to you. What about this, the Outdoor Industry Communication Council? What can you explain a little bit about that one? That is one program of yours that I wasn't as familiar with.
Yeah, so that's kind of really the newest thing that we put out there. So, you know, Dr. John Gassett from Wildlife Management Institute, mm-hmm. We partnered with him and WMI to come up with really top level communications, how conservation is funded, how to recruit the next generation, the economic impact of the industry. And we hired Andrew McKean, who is one of the top writers for the outdoor industry, to write on these topics there. And then what we do is we provide that data, those articles, and we'll turn those into those social media posts as well to anybody that wants to use them. So, you know, they have newsletters or whatever the case may be. There's just some top level information that we want to get out. We want people to know about that we'll provide free of charge. And hopefully, you know, people will start to use that and consumers will read about it. So we've got, I think, 60 partners already, you know, mostly on the agency and NGO side that, you know, it doesn't cost anything to sign up. We just want to keep track of who is a participant. And mm-hmm. then they can go to that website, outdoorstewards.org, and there's a link to the Outdoor Industry Communication Council that's got 6 or 7 articles. And we'll put out an article or two a month. And again, just we know that the messages are, you know, ask people to introduce somebody new, and then it kind of makes it easier for some companies that don't have the means to write these things to just grab one and put it in their newsletter or put it on their social media.
I love that. As somebody who runs a social media for their nonprofit, you know, you are always kind of scouring, you know, what's being shared out there, what's accurate, what's not fake news. And it's hard to come across good information that's effective in terms of communicating what is exactly going on in the industry. So that is something I will challenge myself to lean on and look into more, Jim. Thanks for sharing about that.
Would love to have pass it on in there. Just you can go right to the website and there's a little box that says, you know, I want to become a member. Again, doesn't cost anything. Just put your name in there and then we'll add it to the email list. Anytime we have a new release, we just send it out to the group that way.
I think that's great. I feel like we're always, all of us are trying to get creative to come up with new stories and new angles to present topics on. But really, the wheel's already there. It's spinning, and we just need to get on board.
I would think, too, it'll help kind of clarify some of the messages out there. You know, if a consumer hasn't heard of a topic, you know, it'll inform them for the first time, but it also remind folks of some of the things they might already know and then, you know, hopefully get them to learn more about a topic.
I was on your guys's website the other day and you guys have some really cool shareable graphics, and I'm assuming anyone listening here and if they're in the space and want to, they can grab those and share them. But really breaks down kind of the numbers you mentioned, right? Like how there's 60 million active hats out there right now and the $3.6 billion that they contribute, what that looks like. I love that because I would just be so tickled if I woke up one day and my social media was flooded with all that information. So we're gonna help make that happen.
Yes, and it's funny that you said that because those are probably one of the first things we did. So they're 2 years old by now. I probably need to refresh some of those or come up with some new ones, but I was not a social media person before this, but I'm forced to, right? We have to be that. We have to stay on. I love seeing all your posts of your smiling kids and stuff like that. So I hate to say it, I'm almost addicted to the damn Instagram now. It's a necessary evil. Let's say that.
Yes. That's such a good. It's good perspective. And there's such good storytelling that comes from social media platforms. And I always love to lean on that. If we don't share our stories, then we aren't actually sharing our heritage. And that's so important.
Right. And it's the way to reach the people we can't reach. So if we, you know, partner with Remington Ammo and they send out, you know, the video of, you know, we went to their plant and Arcus RDNR and talked about how conservation is funded, and they send out that 3 million people that 3 minute video to their 2 million people on their house file, and then somebody shares it right on their Facebook, we would never ever be able to reach a hunter's friends and family we gotta have social media.
I couldn't agree more. Jim, I'm curious, what you have such a cool history in this space that we're working in, we have the privilege to work in. What are you most proud of in your new role with OSCF now?
I really enjoy seeing those, you know, seeing people pick up trash is a cool thing, you know, because I've always done it my entire life. And I was like, man, maybe I can get other people to do it. I know we actually did research that said 70% of hats already take other people's trash out of the woods and water. So I was like, well, let's just get credit for it. So that's kind of cool. But, you know, the increasing participation through diversity, I've been working on it for 11 years. Eric Morris, actually, he's on my board. You know, when I built the board, I made sure I had a diverse board with, you know, Chuck Ward being Native American and got a nice mix of gender. I don't know if, you know, Michelle Sherman and obviously Jen Wisniewski. But seeing that and seeing the shift in the way people are the imaging, right? Because that was a big thing. I had done a study 10 years ago. I went to the bookstore and bought every single hunting and gun shooting magazine and counted all the faces in there. And, you know, it was out of 100 faces, 96 of them were old white guys with beards, right? It's just like, we got to change this up. I mean, so it's nice. Now, if you did that, you wouldn't see 96. It's still a high percentage, but we're starting to see that shift. So I'm pretty proud of that. I think, you know, I've been working on it so long. I'm definitely not the only one, but it's nice to see some change there.
Yeah, I read a lot about, I can't remember if it was Simon Sinek that said this, but, you know, the idea of going first and leaning into those uncomfortable spaces and having those conversations, right? Like at some point somebody had to walk into somebody's marketing office and say, hey, we need to diversify our catalog. And it's not just because we should, but we should because that's the right thing to do, right? Like it's not out of obligation, but because everybody should have this equal opportunity to gain access to the outdoors. And part of that is being represented in the imaging.
Oh, yeah. There were some uncomfortable conversations, but fortunately, I don't mind living in the uncomfortable space. I mean, I had some pretty high up people that I had their catalogs, and I said, here, with a post-it on it, there's 27 images in here. 26 of them are old white guys, you know, so time to change it up. And they were appreciative of that. And like I said, it's you get stuck in a rut, right? We've always done it this way. But once you know that it's time for a change, we've definitely seen it. Cabela's Best Pro is doing a tremendous job. Tons of examples of that shift right now.
Yeah, my husband and I like to call those fact-based conversations and not feeling-based conversations.
There you go.
Well, Jim, I really appreciate you sharing so much with us about OSCF. I hope we can follow up with you, have you on again in some time and kind of see where you're at and how that's developing. But if you're up for it, I have some lightning round questions. We do like 8 lighthearted questions, kind of a this or that type of thing. And if you're good with it, we could jump in and start with some of those lightning round questions.
All right, sounds good.
Cool. So I did a little. You're talking about social media and how. Maybe it wasn't your favorite thing, but I did look you up on LinkedIn and some of your background so I could come up with some questions that I think would fit. But when you were at NSSF, you know, we think about shooting sports and, you know, there's rifle shooting and shotgun shooting and archery shooting. So question number one, if you had to pick one of those aspects as a favorite, between shotgun, rifle, and archery as an instructor, which one would you pick?
Oh, shotgun. That's easy.
Okay, good. Question number two, and I kind of struggle with this one myself, but if you were going to spend some time outdoors, whether it's in a shooting sport or just on a family vacation or, you know, what have you, would you prefer a trip onto the Great Plains, the Rocky Mountains, on a coast somewhere in one of the northern forests, or along the Appalachian Mountains?
I would say whichever one has, you know, ducks. I'm a big waterfowl.
Okay.
I'm not good at it, but I love going after waterfowl.
Okay. So I'm going to park you in the Great Plains in the Central Flyway.
That sounds good. Let's go.
I like that. Okay. I like that.
So I think you just answered question three then. Do you prefer waterfowl or upland?
Oh, waterfowl, yeah. I mean, I like upland as well, but waterfowl, for some reason, those ducks are in my head.
Yep, I understand. So our goose opener where I live is this weekend, and then our youth waterfowl is the following weekend, and then our general is the weekend after that. And Brittany and I were just talking before we all jumped on that we were in a very historic drought, and most of the places that I hunt ducks were dry. I mean, like completely dry.
Yeah,
and
scary
we got
dry.
8 inches of water of rain yesterday. Well, between the last 2 days. So some of the ponds, in fact, I stopped at there's a refuge marsh 20 minutes from my back door, and I drove through there yesterday, and there was water over the road. So our duck season, it's looking a lot better than it was 3 days ago.
Yeah, you timed it perfectly.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, we're going to thank the man upstairs for that one.
That's for sure.
Yep.
Now we're going to ask him to spread that out throughout the month, not just all in one day.
Yeah, 8 inches on one day. Brutal.
Yeah. Okay, so question number four. You get to choose a cast and blast. So you get to choose between doves, and crappie, grouse and brook trout, or coastal ducks and coastal fishing?
Man, you'd think I'm gonna go with C, but it's, when you said grouse too, I mean, that's what I grew up on. We don't have them around here anymore, but I love rough grouse and trout. You know, that was what I did with my dad growing up for 10 years. I missed a lot of rough grouse, Rob. We didn't have a dog, so we didn't have much of a prayer, but it was, I'll never forget those days walking, you know, stone walls and all that sort of stuff. And cool. Getting the crap scared out of me by every time a grouse would flush, and never ready for them. I could be ready 59 out of 60 minutes, and that 1 minute I wasn't ready, I'm bending over, you know, moving a pricker out of the way. There goes the damn rat, you know.
Those are rich stuff. Memories. Rich memories.
Okay, question number 5. Wild game for dinner. You prefer a grilled venison backstrap or a fish fry with some fresh walleye or crappie, whatever your favorite fish is?
With the backstrap, 100%. So good. I'm grueling now.
Yeah.
That is hard to beat, not going to lie.
And plus the fact that, you know, you harvest it yourself. There's a quote in like one of the Color Money about like money won is twice as sweet as money earned. And I always like to say, you know, meat that you get yourself is twice as good as meat you get at the grocery store. No doubt about it.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay. So number 6. So this one's a strictly an upland question, but you're on the plains and you have to pick between a cold, snowy, sunny afternoon. You know, it's cold, but tolerable, right? The sun's out, not too much wind, hunting pheasants, or a mild November day over pointing dogs hunting bobwhites.
Ooh.
I would go bobwhites because I don't get that opportunity. We have Connecticut DEP does a great job. We got 40 places here that they stock with put and take birds, but I don't get to hunt bobwhite, so I'm there.
Okay, great.
Jim, you gotta make your way to Kansas.
Yeah, I think we're gonna have a good year for bobwhites this year.
That's all what right. I've been reading anyway.
Yeah.
I think one of my board members, Peter Churchborn, is out there on a hunt right now. He's sending me pictures.
Love
great.
That.
Number 7. So a non-consumptive, let's say you're going to maybe Quivira here in Kansas, is a destination for wildlife viewing. Do you prefer bird watching with binoculars or doing some big game photography with a DSLR?
I guess I'll go bird watching. You know, Steve Hall, right? He was from Texas. He's a big birder, and I was hunting with him earlier this year, and he's like telling me all these sounds, what birds there are. I had no idea. So I gotta get on that bird watching. It was cool learning from him.
Yeah. There's some people that are really, really into it. I think Lindsey Ryan was one of our podcast guests previously to talk about hunting mushrooms this last spring, and works for Kansas Department of Wildlife and Parks. And she's really deep into bird watching and keeping lists and trying to find those birds that she hasn't seen before and learn their song. And that's pretty cool.
I think
cool
it's
stuff.
Amazing. Yeah. I love the patience and the discipline behind that. It's really cool. Yeah.
In my free time.
in all of that free time we talked about, Jim.
Yeah. So the final question number 8. And I'm trying to decide this for myself. And it doesn't have to be something that you actually have or have experience with, but maybe it's just the ideal, what you have pictured. At least that's where I'm going with for me. But your favorite adventure vehicle. So whether you're off on a fishing adventure, a hunting adventure, a camping adventure, is that a pickup? Is that an SUV? Is it a Jeep? Is it, you know, you're pulling a travel trailer? I don't know. What's your favorite adventure vehicle?
That's a good one.
Yeah, I've been driving a F-150 for the past 15 years with, you know, like 6-foot bed. I throw the kayaks in there, even the rowboat, and plenty of room for decoys and stuff. But I think for more fun, it would have to be the Jeep Wrangler, right?
Mm-hmm. So then are you going Jeep Wrangler with the cargo rack on top, like the four-door Wrangler, the two-door Wrangler, or the Gladiator that's got the pickup bed? Like,
I don't know. I'm a traditionalist. I'm just going to go with the little two-door, the 1999 model, right? Mm-hmm. That you can just take anywhere and winch yourself out of any situation.
Yeah. And you look cool doing it.
Yeah, and that's an adventure, right? That's what we're talking about.
Right. So then you're going to have to come up with a trailer to throw your kayaks on, throw your decoys on, put your four-wheeler on. Yeah.
I'm just following somebody that's got all the gear.
Okay, that's fair.
But again, you'll look cool. So that's really all that matters, right? Yeah, that's it.
Well, you passed, Jim. Nice work.
I don't know. This was awesome. I appreciate it. I had a great time. And yeah, I look forward to hopefully, working with you guys more. I'm sure I'll see Brittany around, and good to meet you, and stay in touch, Rob.
You bet, for sure.
Yeah. Jim, before we close out here, tell us, where can folks connect with Outdoor Stewards of Conservation Foundation online, social media? How can folks look you up?
Yeah, the best thing is, to keep in the most current contact with us is Instagram at Outdoor Stewards. We got Facebook as well, and whatever the other ones are, but I can't, we're focusing on Instagram. And then we're going to post all our videos and episodes that we're doing to outdoorstewards.org as our website. So those are the best two spots for it, for sure.
Okay. Perfect. I'll be sure and link those in the show notes. So if folks want to go follow you on Instagram or go check out the website, it'll be easy for them to find it.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah. Don't forget to hashtag trophy trash.
That's right. Yes. Love seeing those pictures.
Yes. Well, Jim, thanks for joining us, and everybody else, thanks for tuning in and listening. Please share, this episode with somebody, and like and comment on all of our social medias as well, so we can keep sharing the goodness of the outdoors with you all.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Rob. Thanks, Jim.